Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello there, and welcome to episode 175 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. In today's show, Kelvin talks to Joel Harrison, B2B digital marketing expert. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So I'm joined by Joel, who's kind of very much an expert on B2B marketing. And I wanted to ask you, Joel, what did you think was kind of the biggest digital trend in B2B marketing recently? And kind of where do you see B2B marketing heading in the kind of short to mid-term, so the sort of 12 to 18 month period?
Well, one of the things, it's a very good question. One of the things people are talking about an awful lot, and we had a huge amount of interest in our event back in June, a summit event, is the notion of content marketing. And I think content marketing means different things to different people in different places. But I think in B2B, it really is looking at all the means of the types of content that you can use and do use to bring your prospect through quite a complex sales cycle. In B2B, it's a very, very complex sales cycle. Often, multiple decision makers, takes a long period of time, and some companies can easily have sales cycles that last over a matter of months, if not longer than that. And so what you need to do is provide a lot of content to draw people through from initial interest into actual kind of often quite detailed evaluation of different solutions, and these can be different people at different levels. You can have technology people looking at things, you have financial people looking at things, you can have the business decision makers looking at in different departments doing it. So content marketing is a means of understanding that in a different context. People have always produced content, but the digital world means that content now takes on a new life, because instead of it being push content, it becomes more about pull content. So things like white papers and videos become much more important. It's about making yourself searchable and getting this content available to people. There is an element of pushing out as well, via social media particularly. You can create interest around things there. But this whole notion of using content in a more kind of structured, integrated fashion to draw people towards you rather than push material out to them has become very compelling, and people are really aligning with it.
And do you think B2B marketers are getting more confident at producing perhaps some of the more kind of involved content? Because there's kind of a level of complexity and confidence that needs to go into producing a video as opposed to a white paper. You know, most business owners would feel very comfortable kind of writing about their business or service, but perhaps wouldn't feel so confident producing a podcast or producing a video about that, or, you know, various other different types of, more involved, webinars being, far more, far easier to organise than perhaps they would in the past. So you're kind of seeing more variety there, or kind of people, is that a slow step that some people are taking, or does it entirely depend on the marketers in question?
I think it's a very good point you make there. People, it is difficult. It's very different to producing a white paper than it is to producing a video, and these things are much more technical. I think video is a very particular case in point, because video is a hugely engaging piece of technology, or ways of promoting your message, and it's very, very powerful. But at the same time, you've got to do it right. And whilst it's easy to write a white paper or commission a journalist to write a white paper, doing a good piece of video is much more difficult, and it's also much more expensive. So the stakes are higher, as it were, but at the same time, the rewards are also higher if you can get it right. Are people getting better at it? Yes, they are. It's slow, and some companies are better at it than others. But I think that, and I think that therein lies the challenge. Brands, B2B marketers particularly, have been kind of struggling to kind of embrace digital over the last few years. So, you know, many of them are getting their understanding that digital has to be the center point of your marketing. But they have to think differently again. And I think there's a notion of brand journalism, brands becoming content producers, which is really important. And that is an adjustment that companies have to make and marketers have to make. But it's great for people like me because I'm a journalist. So I like the idea that content and content skills are becoming more valuable.
Yeah, no, very much. And you kind of touched there a bit about kind of social media and the kind of the role that that has within, you know, distributing and seeding this content that's being produced. I mean, in many cases, kind of if you talk about B2B, most people tend to think, okay, LinkedIn's the most obvious choice there. Is that kind of a pattern that you're seeing? And, you know, are people as effective at LinkedIn as perhaps they are on some of the kind of more, B2C or like Twitter, for example, can work in a B2B environment, can work in a B2C environment, whereas LinkedIn is seeing very much more as a B2B social network. Are you seeing more of your, you know, community making use of LinkedIn, or are they kind of going where the traffic is, which is potentially Twitter or Facebook?
Well, I think the thing is with LinkedIn, again, it's this really interesting discussion point. LinkedIn is a kind of must-have in B2B. If you're a business and you're looking to talk to other businesses, you've got to be on LinkedIn. There's no question about that. How you can use that, well, that's a slightly separate point. I mean, LinkedIn is starting to build the kind of company page area. They're trying to add functionality to that, encouraging you to drive followers to your company page. Ultimately, they're very focused around the individual. It's very focused on personalized networking, which tends to lend it towards a sales mechanism rather than the marketing mechanism. But I think it is changing. I think opportunities are kind of increasingly growing. And I did some auditing recently on some large companies. It's amazing how many big companies, their primary LinkedIn group is actually not owned by anybody who works for that organization, which strikes me as ridiculous. Mm. You've got to be on LinkedIn. But I think Twitter is probably you're able to be more proactive with Twitter and potentially more aggressive, which doesn't always work. But Twitter is very powerful. Facebook can work in B2B, but I think you've got to have a different kind of message. You can't talk about hard business messages. It's a great way of talking about some of the softer stuff around your brand. And Google Plus,
certainly an interesting, isn't it, Google Plus? I mean, because coming from an SEO background, the kind of arguments for Google Plus are perhaps potentially a little bit different, where it's kind of, well, actually, whereas Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, you've got to ask yourself the question, is the traffic there? Are the actual punters there? That's the question that determines whether you invest in them or not. Whereas Google Plus, it's kind of a slightly different one because it's, well, the traffic probably isn't there, but if you can see longer term that the investment now might help you in SEO down the line, then there's potentially, you know, you're doing it for two reasons rather than just one there. But yeah, it's a tricky one.
Absolutely. It is really interesting. It's interesting seeing people like, I think it was the Financial Times, one of the big financial newspapers, Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, just came out and said, we've got a million, Google Plus followers. But the thing to consider also, Beric Kelvin, you were saying a lot of your audience is international. I mean, you know, LinkedIn's big in the English speaking world, but Zing is huge in Germany. Videa is the one in France. So there are all these different platforms doing different things in different places, and culturally there are different ways of engaging. I mean, we've got a presence on Zing, but people are very slow to actually engage in that area. But it's fascinating. What you're seeing is people that the use of social media platforms filtering up as people get older, frankly, as the non-digital natives, frankly, move out of the business world because they retire. You're going to get businesses becoming more and more socially savvy, and things like LinkedIn become more and more important, particularly also as the functionality and technology changes.
And I know we've got some of our listeners who are in a B2B environment and some of them are in a B2C environment, but is there kind of a huge difference in the targeting of how you'd go about targeting a B2B audience versus a B2B if someone's looking to make that move? And are the audiences more willing or less willing to engage because they're kind of in work time, as it were?
The interesting thing happening at the moment is that mobile is really changing the way in which companies engage with individuals. You know, there's this notion of is this a thing as B2B? Is this such a thing as B2C? Well, I mean, the numbers are blurring. And there was a guy in the States called Rick Siegel, who's a CEO, who's very senior at a Gyro, the agency over there, and he coined what he calls being the internet apps, work state of mind. Mm. And you can be in this frame of mind wherever you are, wherever and whenever you are. You could be on the bus, you could be at home and sat at the bath. So the kind of boundary is definitely blurred. It's less delineated between between hours of the day, your physical location. It's what you're thinking about at the time. And you can, increasingly today, you can do whatever you need to, whenever you need to, on your mobile device, be that a smartphone or a tablet. Are business decision makers different people to engage with? Is the sales slightly different? I would still believe that it is, because what you're dealing with is complicated products, and it can be very large investments, and it often takes some time to make these decisions. But I think what you're seeing is that there is a consumerization going on, but the means of interaction, the means of engagement are changing. We're becoming a little less formal, a little more two-way, and that will have repercussions, and we'll watch this trend change over the next years and decades, and I think the boundaries will become less defined.
And I think you're probably right that there's kind of, particularly in social media, that there's kind of perhaps less of this delineated line between, so for example, my personal Twitter account is also my work Twitter account, and I think that's not entirely unusual, is it, that the account that someone would use for business reasons is the same as the one they would use for personal reasons, so therefore actually there's perhaps less of a distinction between the two there as well. Is that a trend that you're seeing, or is that kind of more specific to people working in digital marketing, so therefore like they perhaps don't see that distinction between the two? Are many B2B businesses, is it quite separate, you know, how they use Twitter at home and kind of in the work environment?
Oh, I suspect that a lot of B2B companies, your personal profile, you have to kind of play quite a corporate line. And I think in the digital marketing world, I think there's more of a blurring of boundaries between your social life and your work life. I think if you're a senior marketing person in a large B2B company, particularly if you're international, you've got to play it with a straight bat, as they say in England, with a cricket metaphor. I don't think you can afford to be too social around things. But you know that will kind of gradually blur over time. But I think there's also a bigger issue around that in terms of some corporate companies. I mean, we talked to a guy recently who works in the kind of professional services area, and they're seeking to actively. The objective for them is to get their spokespeople engaged on social media, so that their key decision makers, their key opinion formers, their key experts in key areas, to actually be active in social media. That they need these guys to be active, but they, at the same time, they can't necessarily trust all the things that they say. So there's a balancing act between encouraging people to engage with social media, but not wanting to let them go too far, because sometimes they need to take quite close control over the message and what's being said about them, by whom and to whom.
No, potentially, yes. And it's kind of, in some sectors it's very easy, but in others, particularly if there's compliance there, if there's, you know, kind of particularly around kind of, yeah, like you said, professional services, where there's advice, and the kind of advice that you would give in a 140 character tweet might not necessarily reflect the intricacies that you know you would want to kind of really get across there as well. So I've definitely seen that. And have you seen kind of particular platforms that work particularly well in B2B? So, you know, email marketing, mobile apps, any kind of standout examples of perhaps, you know, maybe not unusual, but, you know, I mean, kind of beyond the hype is very much on social media at the moment, isn't it? Whereas I think email and apps and a lot of that type of thing can work very well for businesses. Are there any standout examples you've seen of that, or particular channels that you've seen work well?
Well, the big thing that's going on in B2B marketing at the moment is marketing automation, which is one of the areas in which B2B is actually ahead of B2C. Mm. So these are platforms which are, you could just, the simplest way of describing them is a souped up email platform that delivers triggered campaigns. It's linked then to a sophisticated analytics engine, and increasingly to a sophisticated social engine. So what you can do is you can track people through you can track their whole kind of engagement with you, and you can score them. So you can say, well, they opened a white paper, they downloaded a white paper, that gives them 5 points. They opened this 3 emails and they clicked on this link. Oh, and by the way, they tweeted about it as well. And you can give them a score on their basis. And once they pass a certain threshold in their score, you then hand them over to sales. So it basically allows you to be much more sophisticated in terms of how marketing engages with sales, and the resource that sales inputs into attempting conversion, rather than it requires marketing and sales to really engage up front and to set the criteria for what is a lead that both sides describe as acceptable. Because obviously the key issue in marketing, B2B marketing over the years, has been the failure of sales and marketing to actually engage effectively. And this really drives that and takes it to a whole new level. And these systems are very powerful. There are quite a lot of them on the market now. Most of them are kind of coming over from the US the kind of leading solutions are the likes of Eloqua, Marketo, Silverpop, people like that. But there are a lot of other ones out there. Some of those bigger solutions are aimed at the larger, well, at the heart end and the kind of corporate end, but there are some SME-focused solutions out there. And a lot of the email vendors are getting into that space as well. They're enhancing their functionality in order to incorporate some of this, certainly some of this triggered-based dynamic campaign type stuff, and then they're also moving into the kind of more analytics side of the spectrum as well. So this stuff really provides a lot more visibility over the sales effort, and potentially can really transform your marketing activity, and it's a very key area in B2B right now.
And in terms of kind of if someone's going down that route of marketing automation and kind of trying to bring CRM in with kind of some of the social media and, you know, and analytics as well, is there any advice that you can give them in kind of how to go about that procurement process? Because like you say, there's kind of a huge difference between a proper full-blown enterprise solution and something that's more set up for SMEs. Is there kind of any advice you can give them on how we should go about that research process and making that decision? Because potentially, not only is that kind of quite a big decision that they've got to make, it's one that they really need to stick. They don't want to be changing solutions every 12 months on that to kind of take fully advantage of that. So any advice on how to go about that process?
No, you're quite right. I mean, it is a solution. It's marketing automation is for life, not for Christmas, definitely. And I think that getting the solution, finding the right solution is a key part of that, but it's far from the only aspect of it. You've actually got to work out if your organization is ready to do it yet, and you've got buy-in from all the key stakeholders. If you haven't, you're probably going to be killing yourself to try and get this thing on board, because it does require a cultural shift. And that's not just from the marketing department, it's more important from the sales team as well. So that's a key thing. You've got to, in terms of picking the right solution, you've got to understand where the different solutions are pitched, what your requirements are in the short term and in the kind of more medium term and longer term, and work out which platform will work best for you on that and that sort of things. And there's a degree of there's a lot of usual stuff here, but you've got to think more deeply. It's not just like about choosing a if you choose an email platform, the functional requirements are relatively limited in terms of what you can do, what you can expect. With marketing automation, you've got to look forward to the future, and you've got to realistically take a view on what you think you'll be doing in the next in the time coming forward, and therefore which functionality you require, because there's no point in buying something which you don't need. But at the same time, you don't want to undersell yourself as well. So it's a tough balance to have, but I would urge people to look at it because it is the future.
And in terms of, is there any kind of, and I know that you come across kind of great marketing campaigns from a B2B background, is there any that you kind of, you've come across recently that you would really single out as ones that if people are working in B2B and kind of perhaps looking for inspiration of campaigns that they can go off and kind of learn from, is there any in particular that you've seen recently that you thought, wow, that was really well conceived and really well delivered?
That is a great question, and without wishing to sound like I'm doing a plug, we've actually just been judging. We had the first judging of our awards last week, and there's lots of great campaigns in there. I think the problem with people, there's a great misconception in the B2C world that B2B isn't creative because we can't think of any standout stuff. And the problem is that there's the standout stuff you can think of tends to be the really big high profile pieces from the large brands. But I think the issue is that most of the standout stuff happens in a vertical sector. And if you're not in that sector, you never see it. So the stuff that I tend to see on a weekly basis tends to be the really big brush efforts from the kind of city-based companies and the technology companies. Those are the ones that I literally encounter an awful lot. I love the stuff that IBM continues to do. And I noticed that Cisco has been really, really effective in social media terms. They've really kind of punched above their weight around the whole Olympic stuff, and they've actually been quite competitive with the likes of P&G. So the stuff that Cisco's been doing around the Olympics has been very, very powerful. So I think that's something I single out.
Fantastic. No, definitely worth keeping an eye on those awards, because I think that is a great way to kind of, if you are looking for inspiration, go out and see who's been nominated and shortlisted for campaigns and who's won them, because there's a lot you can learn from there. Certainly I've done that in the past and been surprised by the kind of how much inspiration you can take away from that.
Thanks, Kelvin. Much appreciated.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website, and if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, It's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White is signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.